And it is 25-7009 Brown versus Flowers. Mr. Capron?
Thank you. May it please the court. I have a fundamental factual proposition that I want to start my argument with that I think is undeniable in this case, and that is that the policy that we're dealing with in this case absolutely provides coverage for some sexual misconduct claims. The reason I think that's important to start with is because both rationales that the trial court gave for denying coverage in this case presume that all sexual misconduct claims are not covered or that there is no coverage. In fact, that's also the underlying factual presumption of the argument made by the garnishee in this case. The fact of the matter is the policy is very clear that some sexual misconduct claims are absolutely covered, not just for a duty to defend, but a duty to indemnify. I'm referring specifically to the appendix, page 227, which is where you find the exclusion 38. Exclusion 38 separates both the duty to defend and the duty to indemnify, and specific as to sexual misconduct claims, says that there is coverage for sexual misconduct claims. There's both a duty to defend, and after liability is found, there is a duty to indemnify. That's subparagraph 3 of exclusion 38. 38 says, ACOSIG will indemnify a plan member for liability arising in connection with a sexual misconduct claim unless two things are found. And I'm going to come back to those two things. But the fundamental first proposition I want to establish is that there is coverage for some sexual misconduct claims. And in this particular case, even coverage after a verdict or a judgment verdict and judgment are entered and liability is found. If you look at the trial court's order, the trial court started with saying Mr. Flowers was not a plan member because he fell outside of the scope of his duties. And he said, as a separate matter, if he was a plan member, this exclusion 38 applies to exclude coverage. In both scenarios, the trial court assumed that that the fact that this was what he called a sexual misconduct claim necessarily meant that Flowers was not insured. Specifically, if you look at page 5 of the order, the trial court is finding that Flowers was not a plan member because sexual misconduct claims cannot be covered under the policy. There wasn't a finding of any of the things that would trigger a scope of duties analysis. In fact, the trial court expressly recognized that there was no jury finding on any of those issues. It wasn't just that there was no jury finding. This court, in a prior appeal, found that summary judgment, that was appeal 23-7006, this court found that summary judgment was properly awarded on punitive damages because there can't be such misconduct that would constitute criminal, fraudulent, malicious, reckless conduct, all the things that would take him outside of the course and scope of his duties according to the policy language.
Well, he pled guilty to two counts of rape, right?
Neither of which requires force. That's correct.
Well, you don't have to have force under the policy.
In this particular case, this is the claim that's at issue is not a rape case. It's excessive force claim. And that's why that's the distinction that I'm trying to make. He absolutely did plead guilty to those two counts. And neither one of them, of course, was relevant to the determination of liability in this case, as the judge instructed the jury.
Well, the inmate cannot consent, right? So it's rape.
That's not the way the case was presented to the jury. It was presented to the jury in this case based on consent being a pure defense. That's why I think the trial judge instructed the jury in our case.
Well, you've got two cases. You're talking about the civil case versus the criminal case, right?
That's correct.
Okay. In the criminal case, he pled guilty to two counts of rape that
That's
require
correct.
Non-consensual sex.
I beg your pardon?
That he had to have non-consensual sex. And by
I
statute,
don't believe consent was an issue in that case.
By statute, under Oklahoma law, she could not consent. If it were consensual, how could he plead guilty to rape?
Because I believe the statutory elements make just the fact of intercourse
Yeah,
liability.
because she can't consent as a matter of law in Oklahoma.
In the criminal case, that may have been the matter, but in the civil case that we're here on, that is not the way it was presented to the jury. The judge presented this with consent being a pure defense.
You're not here on that civil case. You're here on a garnishment proceeding to collect under the insurance policy. And so
That's correct.
both of those cases are relevant here,
I
the
don't believe that the
civil
criminal
and the
case.
criminal case.
I don't believe that the criminal case is relevant because it didn't change the risk profile in this case for the garnishee. There's nothing about the admission by Flowers or any conviction by guilty plea that changed any of the issues for the insurance company in this case. Their liability was the same with and without the finding in that case, and that's exactly what the trial court instructed the jury on in this case, that it didn't matter. So the
There
garnishee.
wasn't a jury in this case.
Beg your pardon?
Do you think there was a jury in this case that is before us?
The case before us that I'm referring to is the case in which Flowers was found guilty and now we're seeking to or liable for a 14th Amendment violation, and now we're seeking coverage for that. I think that case is the same as the one that we're bringing this garnishment action within. So I'm addressing the garnishment action and the civil action as one because the civil action only looks at the liability of the garnishee in the civil case. Going back to my point, the policy clearly provides that there are sexual misconduct claims where coverage exists. The trial judge found that because there's sexual misconduct, that necessarily takes Flowers outside of the scope of his duties. That cannot be the case. That's an untenable position under the policy, the plain language of the policy. The
Point me
policy
to the plain
says,
language that says, I mean, the scope of the duties that I'm looking at says it shall not include any dishonest, criminal, fraudulent, bad faith, reckless, wanton, or malicious act. Well, we
that's
know
right.
he committed a criminal act, he committed two criminal acts, right?
Not he pled guilty to them, yes, but the jury
Well, you can't accept a guilty plea unless you do a colloquy that gives the court a factual basis to accept the plea. He pled guilty to two criminal acts of rape.
and that didn't change anything under the insurance policy. That's true, but it didn't change anything under the insurance policy. The
Well, the
insurance policy, the judge
scope of
specific.
duty says it shall not include any criminal act.
That's not what the insurance company is asked to indemnify here for. They're asked to indemnify pursuant to the plain language of their policy for the civil liability in the civil case that was tried to a jury and liability found without regard to the criminal matter. The criminal matter stands, no matter how similar the parties are and the issues were, stands separate from this civil case. And that's exactly what the trial judge instructed the jury.
That's
Trial
not.
judge said that they are not to they're not finding guilt or innocence in that case, and that is not controlling of any issue in this case.
Well, that is true that it wasn't. It doesn't change the fact that, with respect to the same set of factual circumstances, this man pled guilty to two counts of criminal rape, which are specifically excluded under this policy.
They are only excluded under this policy if Section 38 sub 3 applies, and it doesn't. It doesn't apply because Section 38 sub 3 specifically says that even in light of sexual
Well,
misconduct,
why don't you read it instead of paraphrasing?
ACOSIG will provide a def I'm sorry, that was sub 2. ACOSIG will indemnify a plan member for liability arising in connection with a sexual misconduct claim, unless a final adjudication establishes or the plan member admits, goes on to the sexual abuse claim. And that's why I'm saying, yes, he pled guilty in that case, but no, it didn't affect this particular insurance policy or the application of this insurance policy to the civil matter. And it didn't because this policy clearly provides coverage to some people who are guilty of sexual misconduct claims. It
Well,
says,
yeah, it specifically says we'll cover an employer from an allegation of sexual harassment by an employee, right?
It says plan member, not employer. And that's what
Okay,
I was
plan
getting at.
member. Yeah, but that's an employee and says we cover that, but we don't cover this. And it's got, you're focusing on one, there's a bunch of hurdles for you. One is it in the scope of his duties? If it's in the scope of his duties, then you have to go to the exclusions. And you're focusing on one of those exclusions. What about the law enforcement in exclusion?
I don't believe that's an exclusion that was found by the trial judge or that this
It
policy.
doesn't have to be found by the trial judge. It's a separate provision of the contract that says we don't cover this. It doesn't have, you're trying to import language from one provision into a different provision. It says nothing about that there in the law enforcement exclusion.
Well, respectfully, I'm not trying to import language. I was trying to start where you started with the plan member analysis. And the plan member analysis is you are not excluded from being a plan member because you engaged in sexual misconduct. If we assume that he did engage in sexual misconduct, and this is a sexual misconduct claim, the trial judge found that automatically removes him from plan member status. It doesn't. It cannot. That's an untenable position under a policy that goes on to say that plan members are still covered. Provided that they don't make an admission of their guilt or have an adjudication of their guilt. And while I recognize that he did have a guilty plea in this case, I don't believe that that was something that changed the risk profile of the insurance company or the apportionment of the risk such that this policy then became ineffective. I think when this policy says that the admission or the guilty plea has to be found. It has to be something that affects the insurance company's interest, and it didn't in this case. It didn't in this case because.
Wait, it's not the insurance company's interest. It's the constant. It's the application of the contract terms. This is a contract,
That's right. And
and
it's
they
a risk apportionment
contracted
contract.
to cover what they contracted to cover, and they didn't cover what they contracted not to cover. So
I agree with
their
that.
risk profile is irrelevant. It's
Well, I
what's
don't,
the
because it goes to
language
the meaning
on
of the contract.
the pane.
I beg your pardon?
Page. What does the language on the page mean? That's what we're looking at.
The language on the page says that there are sexual misconduct claims that are covered. That's the plain language of
And that
13
may be
sub
true,
3.
but they aren't covered if you're a law enforcement personnel and you rape an inmate.
They are if you are. If that is not subject to an admission or an adjudication, and the adjudication in this case is not the finding of liability in the civil matter, it has to be an adjudication of something else. And we know that because the plain language of 38 sub 3 says that there is going to, even if you're found guilty or liable for sexual misconduct, there's still going to be a duty to indemnify by the insurance company. It's plain language. And that
So
language
really,
applies.
the under your interpretation of the insurance policy, any type of sexual conduct up to and including rape are covered by the policy, absent an admission, and a plea of guilty in a criminal case to rape is not an admission for purposes of the insurance contract. Is
That's
that
exactly
right?
correct.
Okay.
And I'm saying that because the plain language says that even if you engage in what the policy defines as sexual misconduct, there's still coverage unless you have the admission of liability or the finding of guilt. And in this particular case, even though I believe it's undisputed that there was a plea bargain in the criminal case, I don't believe that was anything that changed the insurance company's acceptance of risk vis-a-vis the civil action in this case where Flowers was indemnified. And that's why I believe that there's coverage.
Okay,
I see I
and
only have a minute.
why doesn't the guilty plea count as an admission again?
Because as the trial court instructed the jury in this case, it was irrelevant to this case. It was not something that they can use as evidence in this case that they
Relevant to
would
the damage
follow.
case. Got
I'd
it.
like to reserve the remainder of my time if possible.
All right, let's hear from Mr. Rice.
Your Honors, thank you. Doug Rice on behalf and Pete Serrata on behalf of the Association of County Commissioners Self Insurance Group, the garnishee and appellee in this case. So this case, as the court is aware, involves the determination of coverage of an insurance policy, which in this case is called a liability coverage agreement. We're not here to retry the underlying case. We're not here to retry Mr. Flowers' plea of guilt to rape. But the insurance coverage issue before the court is whether the sex between a jailer and a detainee, be it consensual or non-consensual, is covered by the terms and conditions of this particular insurance policy. We believe that the district court's finding that it was not covered is correct and it should be affirmed. So when we look at this case, there's just a few facts that I think resolve this issue, this coverage issue before the court. First, the conduct which is at issue before the court involves sex. This is a fact. There's no dispute between Ms. Brown or Mr. Flowers that this case involves sex. In Flowers' answer to the complaint in this case, which is at appendix page 20, he says that he admits only that he was charged with and pled guilty to second degree rape for having consensual sexual intercourse with a detainee. And then in his affirmative defenses, down to page 22, he makes clear that his defense to Brown's allegations is that plaintiff, who is Brown, consented to the sexual encounter with defendant Flowers. So Mr. Flowers admits that that conduct of sex did in fact occur. And for her part, Mrs. Brown, in the pretrial conference order, when she reflected what she believed were the admitted or stipulated facts, and I'm not going to read them all, but she said, Flowers engaged in the challenged governmental actions of causing the removal of Ms. Brown's clothes and the raping of Ms. Brown, and that Flowers admitted his actions were intentional. I would also point out that in her brief to this court, to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, in case number 237006, which is a case where Brown appealed some certain findings by the district court, that in her statement of the case, she used the term rape or rapist no less than 37 times to describe the conduct at issue in her case. Further, the entire case at trial was whether the sex between her and Flowers, who's the jailer, was consensual or non-consensual. The court, in instruction number 11, instructed the jury that the jury was to find that if they found that the defendant coerced plaintiff to engage in sexual intercourse with him, that that was sufficient to show an objective harm that violated plaintiff's 14th Amendment rights. And alternatively, if they found that plaintiff and defendant engaged in consensual sexual intercourse, you may not find that plaintiff's 14th Amendment rights were violated. That's at page 66. As the court is aware, the jury did find in favor of Brown and awarded her compensatory damages of $75,000. But regardless of how the plaintiff tries to characterize this now for purposes of coverage, the fact remains that the conduct, the underlying conduct that's at issue in this case, was entirely founded upon sex between Flowers, a jailer, and Brown, who was a detainee. There's no ambiguity or uncertainty in that fact. The second fact that is
critical. Well, can
critical,
you tie this, all these facts that we already know, can you tie it to the language of the policy and tell me what your argument is? Are you saying it doesn't fall within the scope of his duties? Are you saying that it's excluded? What is your argument?
There are several arguments. And that second fact, of course, as you pointed out, Judge McHugh, is that he pled guilty to rape. He doesn't deny that. He admits that in the pleadings in this case, and that's not something that was ever disputed. So I think in terms of tying that to provisions in the policy, there's a couple of provisions that I think are important. First, someone like Flowers, an employee of Pontotoc County, who is, it's important to note, this is an insurance pool. This is an insurance pool where 73 counties or 74 counties in Oklahoma have gotten together to pool their liability. They are our both insureds and insurers. They write the policy terms. This is not your typical insurance company. This is an interlocal cooperation act where they've pooled those reserves. So I think that's important because Pontotoc County, who was Mr. Flowers' employer, participated and helped to write this policy. So this reflects the intent of all of our members, including Pontotoc County. When you're looking at getting to your question, Judge McHugh, the policy provisions, it does provide coverage for someone like Flowers, but only if they are performing and acting within the scope of their duties.
Okay, so your first argument is that it doesn't fall within the scope of his duties.
Correct. That's a defined term under the coverage agreement. And under the definitions of the coverage agreement, it requires an employee to be acting in good faith in the performance of their duties or tasks lawfully assigned to them. That
if he's committing a criminal act, it's not covered, right? It's not within the scope of his duties.
It's not within the scope of his duties. He wouldn't be a covered plan member. And that definition even goes on. If you look at that definition, it further makes it clear that not only do they have to be acting in good faith in the performance of their duties, but it then goes on to say scope of duties shall not include dishonest, criminal, fraudulent, bad faith, reckless, wanton, or malicious acts. Then it goes on to also say any act that results in a claim of alleged sexual abuse will under no circumstances be deemed to further the interest of a plan member. So not only do they have to be acting in good faith, but there are specific provisions that would take Mr. Flowers' conduct out of him being covered as a plan member.
Well, could you rebut Mr. Capron's interpretation that that he never made an admission that would be relevant for contract interpretation purposes?
Well, he has made that admission. He has made that admission in the pleadings on file in this case. He admits that he was charged with rape. He admits he engaged in sexual intercourse with Ms. Brown. Ms. Brown contended that was the entire case. Ms. Brown contended that they engaged in sexual intercourse, but that it was non-consensual. The entire case was consent versus non-consent. That was the civil case. But when you're looking at
what about the criminal case? Does the criminal case have relevance to the scope of the duties?
Absolutely, it does. We're not limited when we're looking at coverage. We're not limited to simply the precise issues that were addressed in the underlying case. We are able to look at all relevant information and factual information. There's no case that says that in looking and interpreting an insurance policy and coverage, you're limited to an underlying case. If that were the law, we would see insurance companies intervening in these types of cases all the time to protect their interest and litigating issues that had nothing to do with the underlying case. So
is there a definition of sexual misconduct claims in the policy?
There is a definition of sexual misconduct.
There's a
long list of things.
Any sexual act that results in damage, it's considered sexual misconduct, right?
Correct.
And here, damages were awarded for this sexual misconduct, right?
Yes, as a result of the violation of Brown's 14th Amendment rights.
So that would be another reason it doesn't fall within the scope.
Correct. Sexual abuse and sexual misconduct is defined in the policy at definition 33. It is a very broad definition. It lists, not only does it say that any type of attempted or alleged sexual act by any person or any persons which causes physical and mental injuries to anyone will not be covered, but it says it lists sexual harassment by non-employees, sexual humiliation, sexual advances of any kind, rape, and any other sexual act or alleged sexual injury.
Okay, Mr. Capron says you can't interpret the policy that way because it does cover some sexual misconduct claims. How do you respond?
Sure, it would cover, and I think it even says that in the definition, that it doesn't include sexual harassment claims. Sexual harassment claims, to the extent that may be some type of sexual abuse claim or sexual misconduct, is going, well, could be covered in some instances. Obviously, just like this case, it's a fact-by-fact basis, but there could be that type of coverage. But what I think is clear is that when you're talking about the act of sex between a jailer and a detainee that results in statutory rape, that I can't, there's no real colorable argument that ACOSIG and its member Pontotoc County ever intended for that to be considered within the scope of a jailer's duties and is going to be covered by their insurance pool. And that, in addition to those definitions, there are also, if you take it outside of the definitions of scope of duty, sexual abuse, there are exclusions in this case. So the exclusions, and I'll just touch on those briefly, that I think would be most applicable are going to be exclusion 34. That excludes any loss in which the named plan member, its employee, or its volunteer has acted outside the scope of duties or in a grossly negligent, willful, wanton, malicious, or reckless manner. And importantly, that applies to all liability coverages under that agreement. It's not limited to certain types of coverages, it applies to all of them. And then, of course, the sexual acts exclusion, exclusion number 38, which is a very broad exclusion. That includes any claims or alleged losses and damages arising out of, related to, or derived from any sexual abuse if a final adjudication establishes or the plan member admits that the plan member participated in the sexual abuse. One, I think that makes it unmistakably clear that ACOSIG and its member, Pontotoc County, intended to exclude this type of conduct, but also that it intended to exclude not only something that had been finally adjudicated, like we have here with the plea of guilt for the statutory rape, but also if someone admits that they entered into that conduct. And here we have Flowers admitting that he had sex when he was a jailer and she was a detainee. He admitted that they had sex.
And
So,
his argument is he didn't admit that it was non-consensual, and therefore it doesn't fall under him admitting to sexual abuse. Can you deal with that?
yeah, the policy, we're constrained to the written language in the policy, and that's how the court is to interpret this, that the way the policy is written and it's expressed ordinary terms, the policy makes no distinction between consensual or non-consensual sex. If a jailer has sex, whether it's consensual or non-consensual, with a detainee, and that detainee asserts a claim, like happened here, then that is not going to be covered by this policy
And
because,
you're looking now at the law enforcement exclusion?
well, I'm looking at the general exclusion number 38 that would apply. It doesn't matter. You don't see a requirement that says that they have to admit that it was non-consensual. Under the definition of sexual abuse, it's the conduct itself. It's the act itself. It's not whether or not there was consent. And of course, Judge McHugh, as you pointed out, there can't be consent in this type of situation. But neither the definition nor the exclusion make any reference to consent and say that we're going to cover consensual sex between a jailer and a detainee. It's the act itself. And that act itself is not in dispute in this case.
Well, before you run out of time, will you touch on the law enforcement exclusion? Because to me,
Right.
that one is just completely plain that this isn't covered.
Yeah, it is, Your Honor. And, quite frankly, there's so many, when we look at this, we believe there are so many exclusions that would apply in here. But yes, the law enforcement exclusion found on page 38 of the policy also provides that we don't have any obligation to pay or even defend a claim brought about or contributed to by any criminal, dishonest, fraudulent, bad faith, reckless, malicious, wanton, or intentional act. brought about or contributed to by any conduct in which the plan member deliberately violated or had knowledge of or consented to the violation of any federal, state, or local statute, ordinance, rule, or regulation.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and wrap up?
Yes. For these reasons, Your Honor, ACOSEG and its member Pontotoc County never intended, agreed, or planned to cover any type of this type of sexual misconduct or abuse. We believe that the district court's order should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Capron. I think you had some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. The fact of this being a sexual abuse claim does not take it outside of the context of Flowers being a plan member. He was. Even though he committed sexual misconduct, he is still a plan member, contrary to what the court said. Plan members don't get excluded simply because they commit sexual misconduct, as proven by the fact of 38 sub 3 saying that some sexual conduct is covered. Sexual misconduct, I beg your pardon. This law enforcement exclusion only applies to one form of coverage. There are multiple other coverages that apply that exclusion has no bearing on. And we didn't even argue the law enforcement coverage. That exclusion does not exclude general matters in this case. ACOSIG did, in fact, recognize their duty after the plea bargain by defending Flowers throughout the case. And even after the verdict in this case, they continued to defend him, recognizing that they do have duties in this particular case. They are not dispelled or done away with simply because he engaged in sexual misconduct or entered a plea bargain.
All right, counsel. Thank you. We appreciate your arguments. You're both excused and the case is submitted.